Want to make a difference in your community but not sure how? Go to GoFundMe.com right now and start a GoFundMe. Seriously. Your next fundraiser doesn't have to start in a school parking lot or a church basement. You can start a GoFundMe today in just minutes. Fundraise for yourself, a friend, or family member, or an organization. All that matters is that you care about them. GoFundMe is the trusted place to fundraise for what you care about. With no pressure to hit your fundraising goal, but tons of tools to help you reach it, you can confidently start fundraising right now. Whether it's creative, local, or critical, your cause matters. And there's a reason why GoFundMe is backed by millions and chosen by fundraisers everywhere. It works, and it matters. GoFundMe helps you make a real difference. Start your GoFundMe today at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com. GoFundMe.com. This is a commercial message brought to you by GoFundMe.
On this episode of Two Dudes, One Cart, he's back, Bob Kitchen, for our July installment. Sit back, relax, and enjoy this interview with Bob Kitchen. And as always, thank you for listening. All right, everybody, we got Mr. Kitchen back, and I can't think of a better way to send this month out is to have Bob on to finish us off for the month. Bob, how you doing?
Friend, it's good to be back, and thank you very much. I'm doing well, man. It's July is one of our busier months. We got our big tent sale going on right now, and it's absolutely nuts. So life's good. People are buying stuff. Economy's moving. We're all as well.
Well, we got some pretty interesting questions. This first one is, I mean, we know you it's a family business, but what sparked your journey into the golf retail world, and how did that come to life? Because I think a lot of people, you know, sometimes the children don't want to follow in the father's footsteps.
Yeah,
you have to have.
Did my passion. Mom ask this?
Huh? Yeah.
did my mom write in this question?
No, but you have to have the passion for it. So yeah. I thought it was an interesting question to see what your answer would be.
Yeah, that is actually an interesting question. You said there's going to be some curveballs, and you never tell me anything up front, Stevie. But and I love that. That's what keeps it real. That's a great question. When I was probably in middle school and maybe early high school, I just had a passion to just learn about golf stuff. Like, I think most people kind of are interested in what their dad is interested in, and my kids are to a point. My dad never forced it on me, and I'm certainly not forcing it on my kids. And my kids have shown moderate interest so far. But I was like a spec tech nerd. I think I'd said this before on this show, but I wanted to know everything about everything. I wanted to know who made a left-handed one iron and who made a lob wedge, and does this one come in different metals, or what shafts do they offer? And like, this is before there was, you know, 12 different shaft manufacturers and all that crap. So, and then the biggest thing is, and I don't think this has much to do with golf, is I'm just a competitive person. And when you own your own business, every day is like gambling. And the biggest thing that I started getting a kick out of and what I really enjoyed was watching the people around me succeed. And that still is my greatest what I'm most proud of outside of my kids. It's what I'm most proud of. I like seeing my kids succeed more than anybody, but see my coworkers, employees, whatever you want to call it, succeed and see all these great people that support their families and all that kind of a thing. So I knew what I had and the personality I have and the brain power I have could do some good and could grow the business. And my dad was like gung ho, but the technology was passing him, and I'm not even a super techie guy either, but I could see what needed to happen, and I just had a head for it. And I pretty much fell in love with the business. And I see, and I also want, I, this might sound fake, but it's the God's honest truth. I like to see people get a good deal. I like to see people that work hard for their money, get their money's worth. And there are so many ripoff artists in the golf business. There's probably less now. There's a few. And if the viewers, listeners probably know who I'm talking about. There's some very high-end stores that charge a lot of money for clubs, and that just drives me nuts. So I guess it's a combination of those things, Steve. I think that's kind of a longish answer, but it's a combination of all that.
Yeah, and I think, like we said, you have to have a passion for it, especially in that business, because I know you have a love for golf.
Yep.
That's a long way away from being in retail, and selling
Yeah.
clubs. Those
Yeah.
two don't always mesh well, but.
If I had a nickel for every customer of mine that says, "You know what? Someday I'd really love to own a golf store of my own." And I'd say, "Well, do you want to start hating golf? Is that what your ultimate goal is? Because if you own a golf store yourself, oftentimes you hate golf because when you're done at your store, you don't always want to go straight to the golf course and do more golf. Like, you got to be really, really patient and really into it. And if you turn your hobby into your job, it's not a hobby anymore, right? So careful what you wish for. I've told a lot of people that. And in the golf business is tough. It's tough. It's hard to succeed. A lot of places in Grand Rapids, Michigan have gone out of business a ton. And we've done well over the years with a good game plan and lots of different revenue streams and avenues to sell equipment. And my dad set it up for success, and it's been the recipe's right.
So, kind of give our listeners and viewers, obviously, because we put this on YouTube, but what's the vibe like in your store and who's walking in? Are we talking like you have seasoned players, weekend warriors, total beginners? What are
Yep.
you seeing these days, and what do you do or your coworkers or employees do to kind of make that an inviting situation?
Yeah. Well, one of my buddies that owns a bar restaurant down the street here, it's called Pete's in Byron Center, where I wouldn't say I frequent often, but I know the place well. And this guy sold it to another guy that I know. And his name's Todd Zeccanelli. He's one of the finest guys I know. He was in the store maybe a month ago or 3 weeks ago, and he told his employees that you can't work here unless you're having fun. So in our last employee meeting that we had, I don't know, last week, early in the morning, 6 a.m., and everybody's kind of groggy and blah, blah, blah. I used that line because I respect Todd a lot, and he's just a great guy. And I said, "You're not allowed to work here unless you're having fun. If you're not having fun, you're doing it wrong, and you got to look yourself in the mirror and say, why aren't I having fun? Why isn't this fun?" And I tell my employees, we had a little employee issue yesterday. One guy got a little pounded his clipboard a little too hard. And I said, "Hey, dude, your job here is to make sure everyone that works with you or around you or for you, if you want to call it that, is having fun. And you didn't, you failed at that. And that's what matters most to me." So when the, because I always, iron sharpens iron, and good breeds good and fun breeds fun too, right? If those are true, the other one must be true. So, we try to keep it lighthearted and keep like we're not we don't ever have to tell anybody they have cancer, right? Like we don't have to deal with serious stuff. We're just trying to make them not 3 foot, or lose less golf balls, or give them a better deal on their golf balls, or whatever. Like we're trying to have them enjoy a sport that's already a passion, hobby, whatever you want to call it. And so if you can't have fun doing that, I don't know what to tell you. You need to look in the mirror and figure it out yourself, because I don't know what to tell you. You should be having fun if you're doing that. So that's the vibe. And then the customer catches that vibe, and our prices are low, and they kind of feel good about what they're doing and who they're supporting. And another guy just told me this week, I actually emailed myself, put it in my notes so I'd talk about it in the next meeting. He said, "People buy from people." And I was like, "What do you mean exactly by that?" And he's like, "People don't buy from stores, they buy from people. If you don't like the person you're buying from, you're probably not going to freaking buy it." And I was like, wow, that's really simple and really good. So I wrote that down, and I put that in my next employee meeting, because I try to always learn something wherever I'm going and whoever I'm talking to, because if you use your one mouth and 2 ears properly, you can learn a lot.
Right. So what do you think the ratio is right now with with customers coming in? Do you think it's just your everyday golfer? I mean, are you seeing more beginners, I guess, is what I'm getting at.
Yes, the demographic of clientele has taken a drink from the fountain of youth. They're younger. The amount of plain, I think we talked about this before too, Stevie, the amount of plain white golf balls we sell is gone down drastically every single year, and it continues to go down. Like These guys want yellow golf balls, two tones, paint splatters, stripes around the ball, triple track, whatever, like, which is young and fun, right? Like the old stodgy guy is just want to, I've always played a white Titleist, you know, like that guy's slowly dying off and nobody wants to be their dad, right? Like people respect their dad. They admire their dad, but like, oh, I don't want to grow up to be just like my dad. And a lot of people do, but they don't want to be, right? They kind of fight that. I think that's human nature. But so yeah, the people have gotten younger and I'd say more open-minded, and the variety of things that we sell and the variety of things we have to offer in order to satisfy the customer walking in the door is just big. Like Barstool Sports and Good, and these young brands and Swannies and probably Bad Birdie, I'm whatever, all these different brands that we sell is just tremendous, and it helps our business tremendously. So it's very diverse. The old guy still plays. More women are playing. Kids are definitely involved. Like it's the sport of life. You play it your whole life, your whole life. That's the beauty of it. I played an outing today, real quick. I played an outing today. This kid I played with got a scholarship from our local high school. He's going to go play football in the Ivy League for Penn. The kid's an absolute stud football player. He's a really good basketball player too. And I said to him today, I said, dude, you got 5 years left of those two sports and then golf's the rest of your life. So start working on your golf game. And the kid got it. He's just a nice young man. So that's the future's bright, buddy. I really feel good about it.
Yeah, I agree. I was going to kind of throw in there, do you think the clientele's younger because we're getting older? They just seem younger.
At some point, Stevie, everyone's going to be younger than exactly right. Or this podcast will be done.
Right.
If we're not alive, it's going to be hard to carry on. I can tell you that. I don't think my kids are going to do this podcast. We'll see. But yeah.
Oh.
Well put.
Well, you've got all the major brands.
Yep.
And you also have a lot of competition out there. You know, there's other
yep.
guys that do similar what you do. You've got the major sporting goods stores and all that kind of stuff. What do you do to keep yourself competitive and to keep Maple Hill unique?
You gotta form relationships, and you gotta when the deal's right, you gotta snatch it all up. I mean, you can't leave it to. I don't think we talked about that Cobra deal that I did, but I just did the biggest deal in the history of Maple Hill, like in the last like 3 or 4 weeks. Cobra is owned by Puma, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they had this iron set that was on closeout last year's Cobra Dark Speed, and they're like $699, and they were they had a lot of them. It said 500 plus in each SKU, steel regular, steel stiff. And I said, well, how many do you actually have? And they were like 4,500 sets. I was like, holy moly. Whoa. He's like, I'll get you a deal on 500 sets. I said, well, to be honest, then that leaves you 4,000 sets. And I don't really feel like chasing it to the bottom. Like, I don't feel like dealing with PGA Superstore and Dick's Sporting Goods and all that. I want Maple Hill to have the deal, and I don't want to compete with anyone. To be honest, I want to own the market. And then I can dictate the price and whatever. And plus, you'll probably give me a little better price if I buy 4,500 than if I'd buy 500. So I went back and forth and back and forth, and I finally struck the deal, and I bought 4,500 sets of Cobra Iron. So it's going to take me 2 years to move them. But that's how you do it. Like, that's a lot of money, and we save our money. We don't have any debt. And then the other thing that you got to think about it from their perspective too, right? From the other side of the coin. So Cobra Puma, they want to get paid, right? They don't want to deal with net 360. Like they,
right.
And Dick's Sporting Goods and Golf Galaxy and PGA Superstore and wherever people are listening to this, they probably have some sort of chain store near them. They want small, quick flips. They don't want to go buy 4,500 sets of anything. They don't want deep stuff. They don't have, do those companies have money? Oh, hell yeah. They got a ton of money, right? But do they have that kind of money sitting around for one iron deal? No, they don't have that. So we have to be different, right? And we've got to beat them to the punch. And I know that the big guys from Cobra Puma pretty well. And I just struck a Mizuno deal this week, and I'm good buddies with the brass from Mizuno. And It's relationships, and when the deal's right, you got to buy it all, and then don't sit on it and try to keep selling these irons for $699. Like that, can I make a lot of money at $699? Yeah, I can do pretty well at $699, but it's not going to move fast enough. So give people the deal, and then if they're on the website and they go, "Oh my God, Maple Hill is to sell irons for XYZ price," I'll get that, and I'll get a pair of shoes, or I'll get a dozen balls, or whatever. Like I said, good breeds good, and if you have this deal, they might notice that deal, and then they're buying multiple items, and that's kind of how you win. That's how the volume game is played, and we're a volume type of business, so
Well, and
that's
like
how.
you said, people buy from people.
Yeah, exactly.
So,
And you know, we when we shoot our when we shoot our videos or Instagram posts or TikTok, whatever that is. You know, speaking of getting old, I don't even, I've never really farted around with that, but Andy and I are doing a lot of the videos, right? And we are the owners, so like we put ourselves in front of the camera, so you know who you're buying from. Like this isn't some corporation with got the guy, don't look behind the curtain, like Wizard of
right.
Oz. Like who owns Dick's Sporting Goods? God only knows. He ain't in the commercials, I can tell you that. But so we try to be make it that small business feel, even though we are relatively large business as far as the golf world goes. So that's it. I think it's best if they know who you are.
What's hot right now in the shop? Any clubs or gear? Or do you have any? Is there any trends that golfers are crazy for right now?
Well, once in a while that Happy Gilmore putter just came out. That was insane. We had a million calls for that thing. That you seen it? You know what I'm talking
Yeah.
about? The hockey stick thing. So that sold out basically instantly. I bought six, not exactly knowing how good it was going to be or how bad it was going to be, and that I should have bought 600. Zero torque putters are still hot. That Spider ZT, like it's hard to get. So the whole world's like, oh, I gotta have a Spider ZT. Like, it's not a magic wand. It's just a putter. But driving irons are still doing pretty well. Mini drivers still kind of a hot topic. That new Titleist iron that's coming out, like right now, we actually just got some sets and we got the fitting components in. So, new Titleist iron launch is hot. There's always enough, just enough to kind of keep the ball rolling and make sure nothing's too complacent.
I think Titleist, they kind of, I don't know, they kind of do it right because it seems like they're always releasing at a time that is, they're whatever months after everybody else. And they're like, oh, yeah, you think that's great? Well, now check these out. So they're the new hot thing, almost middle of summer. I think they do a really good job with that. So, let's talk about what you
Completely
guys
agree.
provide. Like how big of a role do things like custom fitting, and coaching and stuff like that play at Maple Hill?
I would say it's tremendous. Like, the amount of people that walk into the store and just go, I know what I want, is about 5%, 1 out of 20 maybe. And he's usually buying golf balls or a glove or something. He's still probably going to try something on. But the amount of people that don't know what they want is probably 19 out of 20. And you need to walk them through and be friendly, be polite. The golden rule, treat them as you'd like to be treated. And we always talk about world-class service and where would the think of the best place you've ever been. Treat them like that. That's how we want you to treat them. So, yeah, fittings is just tremendous, and that feedback, that word of mouth travels so fast. If you got somebody in there that ain't doing it right, or you got somebody in there that's out for themselves or something, it's poison, and we just don't allow it. So we have meetings on that at least once a month and make sure everybody's doing it right and everybody's on the same page, because you got to have each other's back too, right? Like, if Jesse does a fitting and then Ian follows up with the guy because he does a two-parter or something like that, if Ian's not saying the same stuff Jesse said, it looks kind of bad, right? Like,
Right.
nobody, what the hell are you guys doing over there? Nobody knows what you're talking about. So, like, you kind of have to keep it as a team event. And that doesn't mean that Ian doesn't have some preferences or thoughts that are different than Jesse. I'm not saying they all need to be robots, but like, you need to talk and make sure that everybody's kind of portraying the same message.
How many people, or you can take a stab at a percentage of it, because I don't expect you to know the exact answer, but how many times do you think people come in wanting or expecting to get one thing, especially when it comes to golf clubs, and walk out with something totally different or unexpected?
That's a great question. Is that your question?
Yeah.
Okay, I was gonna say that's a great question. So, probably honestly, it's 50-50, maybe a little better than that in the direction of open-mindedness. So there's people that'll come in and be like, yeah, I want to get fit for the new Titleist irons, and you'll see them hitting them, and you kind of be like, you know, you'd really probably benefit from the Cobra Forged Tech. Would you mind hitting that? Like, nope, I want to hit the Titleist irons. Okay, well, buy that then. That's fine. Like, I'm not gonna talk you out of what you want. Like, if that's what you want, you're so convinced. Or, I'm a Titleist guy. Well, as soon as you hear that, you're like, oh boy. All right. Well, I'm just buy Titleist then. The open-minded guy, the jump ball guy, the guy that is like, I just want the best clubs that work for me. And then you get sometimes like, I want the best clubs, and I don't want to spend more than $700. Whatever. That's fine. Give us your budget. We're not trying to, you know, charge you too much or sell you clubs you don't want to afford. Those guys, man, are just great. They're great. If they don't have it narrowed down at all, it can be tough because all of a sudden you got 14 brands or whatever the hell we sell. You got like you want to hit them all, sir? Like this is gonna take 3 hours and you're gonna be tired. Your swing's gonna deteriorate. So let's kind of just narrow it down to these four and let's hit these. And if none of these are working, because some of them you're just maxing them out relatively early in their fitting. Like, dude, this is your swing, this is your speed, this club, these numbers are really good. You ain't gonna do much better than this. You want to keep hitting other stuff, or is this good? And they go, I had no idea I was gonna end up with a Wilson DynaPower Max. I didn't even think about Wilson. I didn't even think about Cobra because they came in expecting to buy TaylorMade's or Callaway's or, you know, one of the big brands that everybody buys. And so I would say 50 to 65% end up with something they didn't consider, but they also don't know what we all sell, right? Like they have another job. They don't sell golf clubs like what we do. So we're kind of the experts, I guess you'd say, and that's our job to inform them and help them. So we do.
Yeah, I think that's, I would have said somewhere in the neighborhood if I was guessing, especially if you get the right customer. I know there's, I've been in sales before, and sometimes they just want what they want,
Oh yeah.
no matter
Yeah,
what you
we'll
tell
convince
them.
them like nothing. Yeah, exactly. We
And
had
that's completely fine. It's just,
I always tell them you gotta sell them what they need or what they want. If you can't sell what they need, just sell them what they want. We do need this isn't a museum. We do need to sell this stuff. But if you sell them what they need if you can. But if you can't, sell them what they want. One of my buddies came in for a putter fitting. Who's your putter fitter? Dubs are putter fitter, okay, blah blah blah. And Dub got done. He comes to my office. He goes, that dude, I knew exactly what he was gonna get. He's like, that putter fitting was a sham. Your buddy was in my buddy's headstrong and he knows what he wants. And he,
Right.
you know, like, I'm not listening to the expert. And he's really good. He's a really good golfer, no doubt about it. So whatever. Whatever. He's happy. Who cares? It's done.
Do you think your biggest, I mean, every business has its challenges, but do you think your biggest challenge that you generally face is just, hey, I just bought 4,500 set of clubs, but I still have 9,500 sets of clubs? Is that your biggest challenge, is just selling those? Or do you look at it more like, it was interesting that you made the comment that, it might take you 2 years to sell all those clubs. Is there any fear in that when you buy those, you already have X amount of stock, now you bought all this other stock, and it's kind of a staying relevant thing in the retail game, of having this stuff. But where's the Bob's anxiety, nervous line lie at, I guess, is what I'm trying to ask.
Thank God I don't have too terrible high anxiety, but I mean, like, once you spend, you know, like that was a lot of money, right? That was a,
Yeah.
I actually went over to my dad's house to talk to him about it because I was so nervous about it. And it's more nervous, I think, than anxiety. Maybe those are the same thing,
Right.
but I'm like, Dad, this is a big deal. Like, I need you to listen to me. And he's old school, and he was like, I'm not sure about this. I'm not sure about that. Maybe you could just take less. I'm like, Dad, then we're going to split the deal with somebody, and it's going to race to the bottom. Nobody's going to make money. And I've always told our employees, I'm like, money's made on the front side, not the back. If you don't buy it right, you're screwed. You ain't never going to make no money. And then I've also told our employees, like, once we bought it, your job is to sell it. It doesn't matter what we paid for it. Go sell it. Like, what do you mean? I'm like, sell for, you know, when you're dealing with Amazon and eBay, right? Everybody's selling the same thing. This is my online marketers more than the store. I'm like, once we bought it, it doesn't matter what we paid for it. Who cares? Go sell for as much as you can and make sure it's moving. So that will figure itself out, right? You follow what I'm saying? Like, there's a certain, if you price those Kobe irons at $699, you're going to sell a set or two a week. But we can't do that. I don't want to have these for more than 2 years. They will get stale eventually. So if you need to go to $599 or $549 or $529 or $499, like, in order to make this thing move, make this thing move. So it's managing that part. I consider that part of the challenge and part of the fun. Like, I love that. That's part of the game for me personally. So I think your original question was, what's my biggest fears? I guess not buying it right would be the biggest fear, or buying too much. Once in a while you buy too much of something, you're like, oh, that was too much of XYZ, we had it too long or something. But sometimes the fear is buying too little, like that stupid Happy Gilmore putter. Like, and you know, it's not like I'm gonna ever make a ton of money off it. It's a small one-off item, but yeah, it's a fine line, dude. That is the game. That's kind of my whole life.
Yeah, and I kind of what I anticipate the answer to be. It's just one of those, you know, you guys are obviously in a unique scenario where you have the money up front to buy it. You're not, you know, you're not slave to the lender, so to speak, when you buy that mass of a product. I was just kind of curious to get your answer on, you know, where that line is. You know, at some point somebody may call you and say, hey, I have a bunch of these putters I'm trying to get rid of. And you have relationships with these companies, and at that point you're like, man, I probably ought to do this because it's kind of an expectation and you want to keep that relationship going. Do you ever have a fear of that? And you go, man, I just can't make that deal.
Yeah. Yeah. I've had to turn them down here and there. And sometimes I'm like, dude, like, you want me to buy this putter? I just had this conversation with two different companies. As a matter of fact, I'm like, you want me to buy this putter for, I'll just throw out fictitious numbers, 140. I'm like, the thing's going to end at like 179. Okay. Like, that's where it's going to have to end, you know, after I've had it for a year. I don't think I can sell it for much more than 179. So 140 for 179 isn't exactly making a ton of money, especially when your website offers free shipping and anything over $75. There's no such thing as free shipping. So we have to pay it. I can promise you my UPS bill isn't zero. So now you're going to eat another $15 out of that 179 plus credit card processing fees and all the other fun stuff that goes along with all that BS. So now your $40 turns into like 15, and like, dude, I can't buy it for 140 and make money long term. I can short term, because I can sell it for 229, or like, let's just say the thing was 299 originally. I can move some for 229, 239, 219, somewhere in there, and I'll make some money. But if you want me to buy 1,000 of them and it's going to take me a year, it's going to end at 179. So I can't pay you 140, dude. I just can't. Right. And then they'll listen to you sometimes, and depending on who it is. And most of these guys I can be just real honest with. Like my buddy from Evenroll, my buddy from Mizuno, I can just say, hey, dude, this is where it's going to end. And be realistic about it. Listen to what I'm saying. I'm not trying to screw you. I'm being honest. And once you get into that rut and that groove with these guys, and they trust you, and I kind of wear my heart on my sleeve anyhow, and they kind of appreciate that sometimes maybe to a fault, but here's what it is, here's how it's going to be, and let's go, and it's good. Good.
Have you noticed any shifts in how people approach golf lately? Maybe you're getting different kinds of customers, or new expectations when they come in for service. Have you seen any of that? I mean, we covered a little bit. You're seeing more women. You're seeing a younger crowd.
Yeah. New shifts. Like, that'd be a change, like, since in the last 5 years or something. Or two. Yeah, I don't know how long that time frame is. But since COVID has changed. But, like, in the last 5 years, not really.
Okay.
We've kind of set the expectations. They kind of know what they're getting when they walk into Maple Hill, and we personally haven't. The maybe the diversity in like apparel that you have to offer and some of that stuff has gotten a little different, or headwear or footwear maybe. But in clubs, it's kind of clockwork for the most part, which is mostly what I deal with.
Now, what's been your, what's moved the needle the most for you guys as far as marketing goes? Do you think it's mostly just been throwing Andy's face and your face up there on the internet all the time, or do you think there's, are you getting stuff from the staff? You know, I know you got a good staff that I deal with when I send them this stuff, but what do you think has moved the needle the most? And let's say in the last 4 or 5 years.
This guy out of Indiana named Steve who has this podcast. Is that what you want the answer to be,
Yeah,
Steve?
no, we try.
No,
That's
I
the
know.
thing.
No,
You like
I
to
just
see
need to
that, but
give you a little fun, but like I don't know, getting the word out there. The podcast I'm doing at Maple Hill, and this doesn't hurt. I mean, people love hearing honesty and love hearing we're basically over time, Steve, I think we've kind of become two guys that are friends just talking
right.
about stuff, and that's for thank God somebody's interested in listening to what we have to say. So what's moved it the most? We've got some new marketing people that are really doing a good job, and we're marketing apparel, and we're marketing the podcast, and Andy's doing a good job with bringing up the sales and all that kind of thing. The Instagram, TikTok, nobody has an attention span, so like you got to hit 60 seconds or less. Oftentimes, sometimes you got 15 seconds, and if that 15 seconds ain't good, you're done. They ain't gonna watch it. But some of the people like to listen to these longer ones like this, and people that drive for work or have a lot of time behind the wheel. They don't mind this type of thing. So, it's got to be a little column A, a little column B, dude. That's you got to make sure you're kind of hitting on all cylinders without completely dousing them or completely feeling them like where did Maple Hill go? Like what the hell happened to them? So you got to stay relevant without drowning them, and you got to make sure they feel like you're still holding their hand and walking them through the maze that is the golf business and all the people, people that haven't bought clubs in 20 years, which happens quite a bit. They walk into our store and like, oh my God, I had no idea it's like this. How do you ever figure anything out in here? Like, where do I start? Like, it's overwhelming. It creates anxiety for these people. I'm like, I got you. I got you. I said that first little bit. You know what I'm talking about?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that first little bit, those first few words. I said, my whole thing for my staff is to put your arm around them, not literally. And hold their hand and walk them through it. Like, have no fear. I'm here and I do this for a living and I'm pretty darn good at it. That's how Maple Hill got a top 100 fitter and top three golf stores in America and all the things, whatever. I've got you. Just tell me what you want. Be honest with me, and I'll be honest with you, and we'll figure out the best possible solution.
Well, I think I'm shocked when I go play golf, and I go and I play in a lot of tournament style leagues, and the amount of people that have never heard of Maple Hill. I mean, they hear about it after we're talking because they're like, "Man, I really want to get a new driver." And I'm like, "Let me introduce you to this guy, Bob Kitchen." It's Maple Hill, and they're like, "What's that?" And I'm like, "Oh my God, man!" So then I'm getting my phone out, and I'm bringing up your website, and I'm talking to them while we're, waiting for the fairway to clear. I really think a lot of people, and I don't know if it's just the way the world is right now, but they always feel like they're getting the hose one way or the other. You know, they ne and that's.
Oh, yeah,
When they come
they
into a
are.
store, they're always assuming that they're paying way too much, or you're trying to push something on them. And I mean, that was the same when I was in retail for the most part, but everybody always assumes that coming in. How do you set your employees up to overcome that?
How do you buck that? So, the biggest thing, and I talked about this in my Maple Hill podcast, is when you walk into Dick's Sporting Goods, I'll just pick on them. They're right down the street from my store, so whatever. When you walk into Dick's Sporting Goods, they have that store has one source of revenue. They have one revenue stream, and it's you. And their markup on what you're buying dictates the success of that store.
Right.
Right. When you walk into Maple Hill and you buy something, we have a giant online business. We have a golf course. We have a driving range. We have our store. We have our simulators. And then in the wintertime, we have heated stalls as well. So we've got like 5 or 6 different things going on, revenue streams. Plus, we wholesale. We wholesale other golf courses and stuff that need tees, gloves. Sometimes they need cheap shirts, or if we buy a shoe deal, we'll sell them some shoes or something, whatever. So we have like 6, 7 revenue streams, something like that. So we don't – what's different about Maple Hill is we don't have to solely depend on our markup to the person walking in the door for our success, which is a gigantic leg up on everybody.
Mm-hmm.
There's some of our competitors that have a store and a driving range that the driving range brings in revenue, and they're usually very low maintenance, very low overhead, other than the property tax, because it's a big right. piece of land. But not many places have a golf course, driving range, online, wholesale, retail, simulators, heated stalls. Like, almost no one. So we have a tremendous advantage of that. We can run at a much lower markup than what anybody else can. So, I mean, that's the simple bottom line to it. And one of the store managers from Dick's Sporting Goods is now one of my managers, and one of the store managers from Golf Galaxy down the other side of the street is now one of my managers. We got Jeremiah and we got Eric Texer from the competing stores, and they're like, I was so sick of getting bashing my head against the wall, I'll just come work for you. And they're two managers now, and they're great people and great employees. So it's nice to turn them and have them help us.
Where do you see the golf retail business going in the next 5 to 10 years? I feel like if you go to your local mall anymore, a lot of the staple stores that we remember have all closed. And I really wonder how far we are away from just going to a business model like you have and having such an online presence. Do you ever foresee something like that where Dick's is not selling golf clubs or, you know, something
Galloway
like, of that nature?
Galloway and TaylorMade want them too. Some of those big brands like Galloway and TaylorMade in particular, they rely heavily upon box stores to just sell stuff, like pumping product through there as best they can. Like, it's probably out there somewhere. I think Dick's Sporting Goods is still the number one retailer of golf equipment in the United States. I think they are. They also own Golf Galaxy, so they might lump that together. But like the one down the street from us and the Golf Galaxy in our town, we literally do 10 times the business of either one of those stores. Like, but now we only have 2 stores and they have 1 million, you know, 200 or whatever it is. So thank God for the duration of probably golf. People want to hit it. They want to see it. They want to test it. They want to get fit for it. So as long as that exists, golf stores have to exist.
Right.
It just has to. If you want to buy Tupperware, you don't have to walk into a Sears anymore or JCPenney. Right. You can just buy it online. Like, if you want to buy a dress, you can just look at it. Free shipping, free returns, all that crap. Like, so apparel will probably be tough. And then when you're in the golf store, you have a captive audience now, so they can buy a shirt or look at your shoes or bit of glove or balls or whatever. So thank God for that. The companies are all trying to sell more and more and more direct. So if a driver sells for $599, that means cost is probably $480, maybe $460, somewhere in that range. So they'd rather sell for $599 than $460, right?
Right.
So the companies are trying to cut us out, but they also need us. So they're trying to pump more stuff direct. They're sometimes like new customers get 10% off their first order and whatever. And we're like, isn't that a MAP violation? Like, can we do that? And they're like, no, you can't do that. I'm like, but you can? Like, because they're trying to steal the business from us because they're trying to wholesale at retail.
Right.
Which, wholesale direct to the consumer, right? So next thing you know, they're making all the money instead of some of it. Good for them. So like TaylorMade this week, did you see that Bomber One Iron thing that they released?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so TaylorMade releases this Bomber One Iron. and it's $2.99, and it's consumer direct only, and it sold out in 5 minutes. So I had probably 10 people message me, and one of my good buddies, Greg Erdley, in my neighborhood, he texted me. He's like, "Hey, dude, can you get me one of those TaylorMade bombers?" And I'm like, "I don't even know what you're talking about. I haven't even heard about the thing." Because they didn't tell us, because they're not selling it to us. They're selling it direct only. So they basically wholesaled it to customers at $2.99. So that club, had they sell it to us, their $2.99 probably cost us $200. So now they're losing $100 a club times however many they made, 500, 1,000, 1,500, whatever. It's a lot of money. It's a lot of money. Do that math. It's huge numbers. So they're trying to cut retail out of it. And they do that sometimes with limited drops. Callaway's done it with golf balls. Thank God they didn't do it with the Happy Gilmore putter. But like, oh, they did it with those giraffe putters. Did you see those Odyssey giraffe putters? That wasn't, we couldn't buy them. People were asking me, "Hey, can I get one of those giraffe putters?" I'm like, "Dude, it looks cool as hell. I wish I could, but they don't sell them to me. It's consumer direct only." So I think they'll keep doing those drops to make sure that their profit margin stays up and we're cut out of it, but they still need us, so we're not going away.
Let's see. Now I have, here's a, this is a, can you explain the effects on an iron or wedge when you shorten from the butt or from the tip?
Yep, I sure can. So the when you when you butt cut a golf club, the answer is actually about the same. If you butt cut or tip trim a golf club, changes almost nothing. People are gonna go, "Oh no, Bob. Oh no. I saw on YouTube that if you tip trim it a half an inch," if you're like a professional golfer, maybe you can tell a half an inch tip trim or a 1 inch tip trim, like maybe you can tell. Most everyone I've ever met in my entire life probably can't tell. Butt trimming a golf club is how they cut it to length. So it literally changes nothing at all.
That
Zero.
was my answer. I said, for me, it means I got shorter. That's all I said.
Doesn't change a damn thing. Does it change the swing weight? Yep, it sure does. Does it matter? Nope, sure doesn't. I mean, if you're that worried about swing weight, you can put a little tiny weight in the butt end of your, or put your tee in your grip, on the hole in the end, and now your swing weight's back to normal. And if you tip trim a golf club, it does make it a little bit stiffer. Does it lower your ball flight? Does it help you hook it? Help you slice it? Dude, it's so minimal. Like, people read this stuff and they get so into it. I need 1 inch tip trim on a Ventus Black 7X and blah blah blah. I'm like, dude, you are watching too many videos, or somebody you know is too technical. Like, holy hell, like. Well, I saw that I saw Scottie Scheffler has a 7X, tipped a half an inch on his driver. I'm like, yeah, he sure does. He's also the number one player in the world. He doesn't have a job. So if you want to be like that, then quit your job and go chase Scottie Scheffler. Otherwise, a half an inch tip trim ain't gonna do jack shit for you. Like, just people wanna believe it's the tip trimming that's keeping them back. It's not. It's not.
I had to throw that in there. It's called my Rev Bob Up question.
Yeah, you're right. My face got a little redder. Yeah.
Bob, what's the strangest thing you've seen on a golf course?
That I can say on this show?
Yeah, that's probably best.
I'm just kidding. The strangest thing I've seen on a golf course. Well, today one of my buddy's friends had his buddy tee it up off his butt and hit a God's honest truth. That was a little strange. And he hit it. He didn't hit it clean, so he hit the side of the guy's butt cheek, and he's got a huge black and blue mark on the side of his butt. But still, I've seen probably weirder than that. I've seen a few golf carts go into ponds. Golf wise, actually pertaining to the sport of golf, I saw my buddy blade one into a tee marker. And it went back over our heads into the woods. That was incredible. I was like, you couldn't do that in 100,000 more tries. Did you? Speaking of that, just popped into my head. Did you see what Rory did today with that shot out of the
Oh,
weeds?
yeah. And the ball being buried below it, and they didn't have any idea.
It looked like he hit it backwards.
I know.
But his ball went forward, and that ball popped up out of the ground. I've seen people hit it into the ground, like literally come down on top of it and smash the golf ball on the ground. I've seen people bury it in the ground, it pops up and goes backwards. I've seen that. I saw my brother hit a drive that was so bad, he ran forward and caught it. And when my buddies were, I was on the green behind, and they didn't think I saw it. I saw it. And they told me, they were like, dude, your brother caught his tee shot at number 12. And I said, well, I knew he was that bad. I didn't know he was that fast. They all got a kick out of that one. That was fun. But I love poking fun at my brother, and of course I love him dearly. And he laughs at it too. He's hit about every shot on planet Earth. So I've seen some fun things, man. Golf's such a beautiful sport, and you gotta kind of embrace all the craziness that happens out there. And yeah, there's been some wild stuff, man, but it's I love it. That's what makes it so good, right?
I got a couple. I was playing with my wife's cousin in Hilton Head, and he's a really good golfer, and he hits this shot. I'm standing right behind him because we're trying to talk this through. There's a little bit of a little tree trouble, and I said, man, the way you sling the ball, no problem. So I'm standing there. He hits it, catches the tree just right. It shoots straight back, and without even thinking, he catches it, drops it back down, and hits it again. it was coming right at me, and he just
he like caught it like a pitcher, like a yeah. fastball went at him. Yeah. Speaking of that, when I was in junior golf, I don't want to interrupt you, but when I was at, you made me think of something. When I was in junior golf in high school, this guy I was playing with, his name's Pat Orn. I'll never forget it. He was a senior, and I was a sophomore, I think. Yeah, I was a sophomore. And he hit it right into a tree. It came back at him square on the forehead and dropped him.
Ooh.
I think it basically knocked him out, like at least for a second or two.
Oh.
So, I mean, that's scary shit, right? I mean, that's it's coming. Yeah. The ball's moving. It's going 120. Even with an iron, it's going 120, 130 miles an hour. Hits you. But your guy caught it, dropped it, and hit it again.
It's got to be coming back faster than it was going, you would think, with a ricocheting back at you that close.
It hit a tree. What'd you say? It hit a tree?
Yeah.
Yeah, the tree absorbs a little bit, but it's moving. I mean, it's baseball bats made out of wood, right? And they move the ball pretty well. So,
well, he didn't even really. The best thing was it was so nonchalant. He didn't say anything, drops it back down, then hits the correct shot, and we get in the cart, and I'm just laughing. Like I'm crying. I was laughing so hard, but
yeah, that's gold.
The other one is we have a local course that's just past a. It's a park, but it also has like baseball diamonds and stuff out in front of it. And this course is just right. There's a fence separating it. I mean, you can be on one hole and actually accidentally hit it too far and be in a baseball field.
Mm.
So we're sitting there and I'm loading up on the cart and we're right by the clubhouse. And these two old ladies pull in and they just keep on driving. And now they're going down the cart path past the first tee box before somebody stops them, and we're like, whoa, 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 and they're like, oh, we're just going to the park, and I'm like, that's next door. Right. Just these two old ladies just trying to go watch their grandkid play baseball or something. Just right. GPS yeah. is like, turn left, and
right.
Just pull right in the golf course. That was pretty crazy.
Yeah, like when Michael Scott had to drive into the pond. Like GPS told me to. Car's trying to kill me. Believe it or not, my grandma actually did that at a country club. She was going to dinner and she turned down a cart path and was driving through the golf course. But I've golfed for so long and I've heard so many crazy stories. I you know, like you asked me that question, I'd have to think for a day or two to remember everything. Talking about how quick it happened and nonchalant, my Bridgestone rep, Greg Lawrence, he hit one. He played in an event with me at Maple Hill at our own course, and he hit one. He sliced it so far right and so bad. He instantly put another ball in the tee and smacked it again. And I was like, man, that was quick. He looked at me and goes, I have two in the air a lot. I've never heard anybody say that. And he literally had two golf balls in the air at the same time. Like that's, if you think about it or actually try to do it in real life, that's hard to do. Have two golf balls in the air at the same time. He goes, I have two in the air a lot. Like that's, like he is funny though. He's a goofball and I love him dearly. Really good guy.
What's the strangest piece of swing advice you've heard on a golf course?
Oh, God. Does that have to be on the golf course? Can it be the range?
No, like, yeah, it can be anywhere because, man,
Okay.
there's some good ones out there.
Oh my Lord. When I was young, I was probably just out of high school. There was a guy named Willie Bell. He passed away. God rest his soul. This guy had all these different things and all these different things and drills that he gave these people to work on. And he was oh Lord. You've seen Tin Cup when he's got all
Oh,
the
yeah.
hat and all the things and all that. He didn't have all the bells and whistles and all that BS, but he gave people like, all right, what I want you to do on this one now. I'm gonna hold my camera away so you can see a little bit easily. I want you to carry the tray. I want you to carry the tray.
Oh.
Think of that. And then from the top, I want you to ring the bell. I want you to ring the bell. And then when you're coming through, I want you to shake the hand. Shake the hand. And it was like, carry the tray, ring the bell. And the guy's standing over his golf course. You know, he's trying to hit a shot like this. And he's nailing it down to the top 10 swing spots that Willie just put in his head. And I'm watching these people out the window and I'm going, let's work on getting it in the air first before we start worrying about ring the bell, carry the tray, shake the hand, put in the bucket. There was like eight different things that he would tell these people. And I'm like, this guy is destroying these people and they're paying him for it. Like, my God. Oh, if you're that technical for a person that's trying to break 100, heaven help us. It
Man,
ain't gonna get.
I am gonna say right now it's probably well into 80%, if not 90, that every amateur, since we're so bathed in information and we have, all these adjustments now you can make on drivers and three
Oh yeah,
woods, and
yep. Too much.
that is completely normal on the first tee of
No.
every golf course. They start making an iron that you can shift the loft on, we're in trouble.
Yeah. Yeah, they had it years ago. If you ever seen that, it was like club with a dial on the end. It didn't work because the length's wrong. But yeah, I agree completely. Now today, the outing I played in, my buddy Dan. As a matter of fact, it's his birthday, so happy birthday, Dan. But he was hitting it way too high, and I was like, "Dude, you got an adjustable driver." He's like, "Yeah, I don't know how to hit it lower." I was like, "I tell you what, give me your club. I'm not even going to tell you what I'm doing. Don't look at it. Just keep swinging the same way. I'm going to hand it back to you, and you're going to hit it lower and better." And I knocked the loft down 2 degrees, and he started roping it. And he's like, "What'd you do to it?" I said, "I'm not telling you. And I'm never going to tell you. So don't ask me again." But literally, all I did was lower the loft 2 degrees because I just don't want to put too much in his head, like what you're
Right.
talking about. Yeah, I've always said less is more. I love the KISS theory. I just think the less words you can say and the easier you can make it, the better off you are.
Well, I'll tell you a quick funny story. Similar situation. And a friend of mine grabbed this guy's club. He said, "Let me take a look at it." So he takes, the guy's just slicing the hell out of it. So he takes, and it was a TaylorMade. I can't remember the brand, but he slides everything to the fade setting, drops the loft down, and then gives it to the guy. And he goes, "Try this." And he hits the worst golf shot you've ever seen. He goes, "That didn't do anything." He said, "I just wasn't sure you could hit it any worse than you are." And then he
Oh,
goes, "Let me try again," and moves it back. And the guy actually started playing better after that. Everybody was just cracking up.
yeah,
Like,
that's good. That's good. Yeah, that's good. I like that.
so Bob, I think we're going to end this on a would you rather.
Okay.
So, would you rather hole out a 50-foot putt or a 20-yard chip? I know
I'm gonna
you'd
go.
take either one, but I mean,
Yeah. I think if the chicks are watching, I'll take the 20-yard chip because chicks dig a chip in, no, not really, but I would actually take the 20-yard chip. 50-foot putt. I make those once in a while. 20-yard chip, man. Well, we played member guests this past week at our club, and my brother's guest, who's a good buddy of mine, he's not real good. He's like a 24 handicap. He hit his drive in the water, and actually he hit a good drive. It bounced right bad. It took a bad hop, and it trickled into the edge of the water, and he had to take a drop. And he's 150 yards out, and he jars it. That's not 20 yards. That's not what you brought
Right.
up. But you would have thought that he hit the lotto. Like And the guy, he's played not super. He was a really good basketball player in his day, and he played really high level high school and a little college. And he's an athlete, but like the whole out is there's just something about it.
Oh,
something
yeah.
about it. There's just, so a chip in, like a long putt. I see that frequently. The hole out from 20 yards, whatever, is really special because everything has to go right, right?
Well, and on top of that, you know, if you hit a good drive, that chip may be for eagle. That was my thing. I think I would rather, I'll take my chances putting for birdie or and making a par or whatever. But if you have a chip, could potentially be a two-shot swing in a match. I think I'll take the chip every day.
Well, you haven't played Maple Hill yet, Steve, but we have a lot of 230 to 280 yard par fours, so you might have a putt for eagle.
Yeah.
At our course. Our course is short. It's 5,000 yards. That's all it is. But the downside, Steve, at Maple Hill is there is no 50-foot putts because our greens are so small. So you're not gonna. If you hole out for eagle, it'll be maybe a 30 to 35 footer is about as far.
You don't have any of those Oakmont greens out there that are 40,000 square feet.
We have holes that look like Oakmont, but it's the whole hole. Yeah. Not just the green. Like it's the entire hole. Yeah. So anyhow, that's kind of more of a joke than anything, but yeah, give me the chip in from, yeah, I'll take a chip in from 10 yards out.
Oh, I mean, yeah.
It's still fun. Making a 50-foot putt, of course, is hot. My brother dropped a bomb today that was he's a lefty, and it was a right-to-left slider, so it's breaking away from him, and it was uphill and had to hit it firm, and the line was perfect, and he drained it, and it was great. It was par three, so it was a deuce. That was fun. So we're all high-fiving and fist-bumping, but I think chip-ins are just special. So,
yeah, the chip-in, and like you drop a bunker shot, those are always amazing when you right little
That's
spin
very
on it.
Rare.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can give me any length bunker shot, and I'll take that over the 20-yard chip in, too, because that's really special.
Well, Bob, this is another one down. I'm going to put this out for our end of the month.
Perfect.
I hope you have a wonderful time in Germany.
Yeah, been there in a couple of days with my youngest son, Mitch.
I wasn't that's not a text I receive often. Sure, I'll record, but we got to do it because I'm going to Germany. You got that one locked in. Never had that.
Yeah, I've never been. I've never been to Europe, so I'm hoping it gets the gold medal. Everybody I'm talking to is like, dude, it's the absolute best. And I'm like, well, Hawaii still got my gold medal, I'd say. Mexico is probably my silver, and Jamaica, although it's phenomenal, is probably my bronze. But yeah, we'll see. I'm pumped. I'm excited.
Well, all right, everybody. This has been another great episode. And Bob, as always, I appreciate you hanging out with us once a month and chit chatting. It has kind of turned into a conversation between me and you, and I think that comes across pretty well because touch on a lot of different stuff. It's, you know, it's not as easy to continue to talk about golf clubs all the time. And you've noticed we get a lot of the same questions, but hey, I'll just give the people what they want, and we'll try to fill in around it.
You got it, baby. Well, it's always a pleasure, Steve, and thanks for having me on. And I guess until next time, my friend.
You have a good one.
You too, baby.